I'm Andrew O'Hagan, host of a new podcast from the London Review of Books. It's about the bloodiest and most controversial event of the Falklands War, the sinking of the General Belgrano. Margaret Thatcher was accused of a war crime. The truth would only emerge in the pages of a private diary. This is the Belgrano Diary. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the London Review Bookshop.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Elizabeth and Hilda from the University, from the Embassy of El Salvador. Thank you, Natalia, and everybody here at the London Review Bookshop. And I would like to start just saying what I said yesterday at the Embassy of El Salvador. Today, we feel that we're making history somehow because we are presenting a book, an anthology of Salvadorian writers that live not only in El Salvador, but live abroad. You know, we have a very significant diaspora due to many reasons, starting from the Civil War, economical reasons, natural disasters, etc. So there's a big number of Salvadorians living outside its borders, no? So this anthology, so that you get to know what our work was about, and I say we because I am co-editor. We are actually three persons that have edited these two books, Alexandra Litton and Lucia de Sola. They couldn't be here, but I just want to make sure that we know that it's a work. This is the result of three people reading Salvadorian literature for the past 6 years. We started this project, the first one, Poetry, Theater Under My Skin, which is dedicated to poetry, around 2012, more or less. And why? I want to tell you a little bit about our interest to document these two Salvadorian identities, to say it in a way, no? The ones that stayed and the ones that left. Lucia and Alexandra, they flew from El Salvador when they were really young because of the Civil War. They went to live to the United States, and almost 25 years later, they returned to El Salvador. And they felt Americans, but they felt Salvadorian too. My case, my personal case, I was born in El Salvador. I lived there until I was 20 years old, more or less. And then I went to Costa Rica, and then I went to Spain, where I have been living for the past 18 years. That means that I'm also part of the diaspora for different reasons, but I also felt Salvadorian. No? So we started talking about what it means to be Salvadorian and how this is expressed in literature. And why we did this is was not only because of particular personal reasons, but because also there was after the peace treaties were signed in 1992, after a 12-year war, there was a big discussion on the media and politics about what it meant to be Salvadorian, the identity. We have to remember that after 12 years of war, our identity was somehow broken. It was somehow, it was hurt, you know. There were two sides that had been fighting for 12 years, and if you think about it, the revolution actually started some years before, so it had been some time that two different sides had been confronting themselves, no? There was a polarization, if you would like to think about it from a political point of view. And each of them would say what the real Salvadorian would be. So we started thinking, what is the real Salvadorian? Is there really a concrete Salvadorianness? And then we started reading our authors, our poets, and our aim was to document not only the aesthetics, the beauty of the writing, but also, is there really a monolithic sense of identity? Of course not, as you know, no? Identity is something plural, is something diverse, is something that you cannot categorize at the end, no? So that was the aim of our project, through literature, explore these themes. And it was wonderful because from first with poetry and then with prose, We also, the other aspect of our work is to do it bilingual, because we believe that Salvadorian literature has been on the margins for a long time. And usually the ones that get translated are established authors. And we wanted other people to read, not that don't know Spanish, that don't speak Spanish, so that they have also the opportunity to get to read our literature, who we are, try to help them in a way to get far away from that stereotype of what it means to be Salvadorian, which essentially is being violent. No, if you see the media, you hear about the gangs before you hear about the civil war. And well, that's how we started our project. And to translate their work, it gave us also opportunity to reflect on the writing itself. Because when you embark yourself in the translation process, that is another story too, no? Because you have to translate to another language a certain point of view from the author and respect the style. The other aspect that we wanted to document in both books was to include authors that were established, but also those that were emerging, because we thought it was important to include both of them, what the new voices, the young voices were saying, and also the established writers who already have, you know, a path in the literary world. For example, here in this anthology, we have Horacio Castellanos Moya, who is a well-known author. He's going to be talking here on the 29th, one of our references for many of us, you know, who has actually questioned the nationalistic identity of being Salvadorian, and he has paid a price for this in the political point of view, from a political point of view. If you want, we can talk about this later. And we also include authors that were born in the 90s. Alejandro Córdoba, Andreas Portillo, they are only 21, 22 years old, who have talent, and they are also giving us another gaze of our themes, no? Because the other interesting thing that we discovered doing this work was that Salvadorians not always talk about Salvadorianness, no? We talk about the human condition as any other writer. If you read this book, for example, you will discover that here there is eroticism, there's the themes that we always encounter in Salvadorian literature, which is war and discrimination, but you will also find, as I said before, desire, eroticism, alignment, woman. No, we also have seven, we try to keep a balance between women and men. So it has been a challenge for us, but I think the results, we are really satisfied with the results, and it is an honor to be here with Claudia, which I think is the one who should be talking more about this, because she represents our diaspora. No? She left El Salvador when she was 14 years old, and she had to start all over again. She will tell you all about this. She started studying urban planning, she did some activism, and then 10 years ago, she left everything to become a writer. No? So she's one of our emerging writers included in our anthology. So, well, Claudia, I would like you to talk a little bit about this. How did you realize that you wanted to leave that behind and become a writer? Mm-hmm. If this had something to do about your memories of El Salvador, if this was an important point, mm-hmm. Of, you know, of no return, going mm-hmm. back to that other life that you had in a way.
Yeah, I'd like to say, to echo your words at the beginning and say thank you to all of you for joining us today, and for the bookstore and the embassy as well for a fantastic, we had a pre-event at the embassy yesterday, and just being here in this room is, it's so amazing on many levels, I think, mm-hmm. personally as a writer, to stand in front of a room of people who want to learn about what we have to say is an unbelievable feeling. And just also to be able to share our stories as Salvadorans, because one of the things, I live in the United States. I left El Salvador when I was 14, and I've spent almost 35 years. I live in Seattle. Often I say, we Salvadorans hear our stories from the perspective of other people who've gone to El Salvador, other people who covered the war, other people who cover the post-war, a lot of journalistic work, a lot of academic work, but there's very little work in our own voices, with our own stories, with our poems, with our concerns. And if you are from El Salvador, as I am, right? I grew up there until I was 14, so I was a child when I left. And yet, I became a woman, I became a professional, I've become a writer in the US, but I have never stopped being that person who I became at the beginning. That is the core of who I am, and I carry with me. And so, when we have a book like this that has not existed, this is an incredible feat to have a book that is focused on telling our stories our way. And I think that is the tremendous event today with both of these books. Well, I mean, one is prose, the other one is poetry, but they are fantastic in that way, in the way in which we've been so marginalized, we've been completely outside of the map, and here's a book that's beginning to collect the stories, because I see this as a beginning, right? I hope that there's many more. But I came to writing late, I would say. I mean, I think I've always been a writer. I started writing poems when I was in college in the US. I studied in France for a while. I was a student abroad and I started writing then, but I couldn't quite take myself seriously as a writer, partly because there were very few examples of people like myself, you know, an immigrant living in the US, who at the time my command of English now is far superior than it was when I was 15 or 16 or 17 years old, but just kind of finding your way without a guide. And again, I think of this book as a guide. So the impetus was always there, but something always got in the way. So at one point I finished college and went to graduate school and decided I really wanted to go and study literature, but instead I did something else and I studied urban planning because it was my way of trying to understand a map. I think I've always been chasing a map. The map of where I come from and the map of who I am. In urban planning, the idea of maps and cities and the way they're structured has always been, is there for me. So I think that was part of the chasing something that wasn't there through writing came later. My way of getting into urban planning was a way of doing work with the immigrant community in El Salvador because we have a huge diaspora in the US. So it was my way of always being in that realm. And although I was doing a work that was very technical, I found my way to writing every time I volunteered to do, you know, the press release. I would always start newspapers or, you know, magazines wherever I went to for work, you know. So for a while I was working for representing supermarket workers, and I started a magazine to communicate with them. So there was always this impetus that took a weird turn for me. Until at one point when I have three kids, my kids were already born. At that point, I decided this is a juncture for me. I have been chasing this for a long time, and I'm going to go into writing partly to tell the story that I have been trying to get a handle of. And I started writing. I came to writing through poetry. So I'm a poet and a writer, and I'm currently serving as the poet laureate of the city of Seattle, which we call civic poet in Seattle. And I wanted to share a poem, yeah, if sure. I may, yeah. From my book, which is titled This City, which is referring not so much to the, it's referring both to a city and a space, but it's also referring to my internal space that I have always been chasing, which has to do with where I come from, where I was born. And I think some of my, it's hard to try to capture that fragmented way of being, because I am Salvadoran, but I'm also American. You know, I'm still 14 years old. I live in that body. I live in that mental space. But I'm also a mom. I'm a woman. You know, I'm married. I have children. So we all occupy a range of spaces. So I wanted to read this poem because I think it captures that idea of finding yourself in a space that has nothing to do with the internal space you're in. And for me, markets do that. So I grew up in El Salvador. When I grew up, there were hardly any supermarkets. I mean, hardly. And especially where I grew up, there were none. And so we went shopping at the open market. And that was an experience I went with my mom and the fruit stalls, and you can imagine the color, and you got to weigh things and argue with vendors and so on. And so I'm a huge fan of open markets. I'm a huge fan of farmers markets. And it wasn't until I wrote this poem that I realized, really, I do love organic food. I want to feed my kids healthy food, but I'm also going because there's a memory in walking through an open market that I'm chasing. And so this poem is about that, and it's titled Farmer's Market. I go early to hear the citrus tales of pomelos and satsumas in January, discuss the snap with favas in May, have a word with a merchant without saying anything, hold the coin in one hand and with the other chat with an unsuspecting tomato. Market speak is the language of being girl walking with my mother down narrow lanes in the mercado, sweat streaming brow, dogs impatient weaving between legs, stealthy robbers articulating sneak, sellers shouting incantations to buy this cure-all remedy and for a bargain, una mano, all the fruit that can fit in the palm of your hand. At every turn, my local farmer's market betrays the one I long for. The mercado I search lives dormant, a tiny seed rhyming festive and mom inside my heart.
Thank you, Claudia. Beautiful poem.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you now that you were reading in English and then suddenly you have a word, a phrase in Spanish.
Yeah.
I would like you to explain your relationship with Spanish, if you actually write in Spanish or you write only in English, because that's the other thing. We have included writers that write in English. And we translated them into Spanish. Mm-hmm. But I think from the diaspora, no? Most of the writers that have lived to the United States especially, but some of them also to Sweden, that they start writing in the language of the adopted country.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever written in Spanish or do you write only in English?
No, I write in Spanish, although I have to say most of my poems and my prose is in English. I spent a lot of time in school. I'm a fan of university, so I have several graduate degrees, mm-hmm. and so my vocabulary, the depth of command and vocabulary at my disposal, is deeper in English. In a way, I mean, I'm also fluent in Spanish, and I read a great deal, The main thing, I think the first thing is to say that I do command a larger vocabulary in English. The second thing that I've come to understand as folks have asked me this question is that I think that each word is worth something, right? Each word that we speak is attached to meaning, is attached to memories, is attached to other selves, other experiences. And writing in Spanish, because I'm writing about the war, I'm writing about being 14, 13, 12, 10, 9, because all of those years that I spent in El Salvador were spent in the shadow of a war that exploded. Really, we left the 17th of January 1981. The war was declared the 22nd of January of 1981. So by the time my family was lucky enough to leave, to escape, really, we were in a full war. And so I think when I attempt to tell this story in Spanish, the weight of those memories is, you know, there's a lot attached there. And so I think that English also gives me a little distance. And it's a little kind of safety net. And the more I write, the more at ease I am with using Spanish. And the more, for instance, in that poem, to say mercado is one thing. To say farmer's market, that's a completely different thing.
Yes.
Completely different thing.
Completely.
It's a very different image.
Yes.
Different smells. Different. It conjures something that I could never say by saying farmer's market or outdoors market. I'm using more Spanish in the writing that I do, mm-hmm. Through conversation also, because vernacular and tonalities are better, you know, mm-hmm. are nuanced better in the original language. But I'm an English writer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now that you mentioned memory, you know how memory works, at least for you. How would like to talk about this, about the memory, your own memory, but also the historical memory of El Salvador, you know?
Yeah.
Do you find any connections? Have you been to El Salvador? I know that you are writing your memoirs. Mm-hmm. I would like you to talk a bit about this, about memory as a personal space, but also memory, the historical memory of El Salvador, and how this intertwines with your own, and to reflect on this, and how important memory is to document a life, but also a country.
Yeah, I think to remember, especially traumatic events, takes a great deal of courage. Mm-hmm. To go back and hold something and hold it as in the space of writing a poem about it or telling the story that's in this book, it's very hard. It takes courage, like I said. And I think in El Salvador, the exploration of ourselves as people in the space of the war is minimum. It's really so few. That's why this is so important. This work is so important. Because we don't have our own voices on the page, but also because we cannot be ourselves. We cannot find ourselves now. We can't put together ourselves back if we don't recover the memories that we have lost and that people don't share. And for a long time, I thought that my parents were both teachers in El Salvador. They were, my dad in particular, more involved with the left. When we came to the US, my father continued to be very engaged with news and reading and just kept up with literature. And my mom shut down completely. And I shut down, therefore. And my sister, I only have one sister, shut down. And we went into these little internal worlds where we couldn't really make sense of ourselves in the new place without having the memory and the conversation of where we came from. But that's exactly what happened. And it's exactly the experience of many people. And as I've started to, I'm invited to go speak or to go read, or I find myself in often young people, college-age kids will come and say, I didn't know this about El Salvador. And I realized, oh my God, this was not just my story, this is a story of many people, this silencing around the war, around the experience of immigration, because it's so painful, partly, you know, and because it's a rupture, right? You never recover yourself when you leave. Mm-hmm. So understanding and holding that rupture of exile or emigration, it is a very difficult thing. And so I think it's a natural instinct to want to not talk about it, but the silence only makes things worse. Yeah, so I could read a poem that sort of talks about that. I wanted to sort of share my work, partly because the poems only get at that experience, and then the piece that's in the book gets at another part. It's never fully, for me, my journey of writing has been trying to capture this, and sometimes it's better through poems, and sometimes it's better. So it's, this is called Assiduously. And mind you, I live again in Seattle, which is a city that loves coffee shops, and this is partly about that. So Assiduously, from a coffee cup's sweet bitterness into cold wind swept, knowing that the place you search and yearn for is nowhere, no street names, no city gate, no degrees nor longitudinal measures to speak of. A compass can be useless when you are lost. Nowhere multiplies in your chest ravenous like yeast. It hurts. The exact second your shadow on the pavement. Sometimes your life is a minute ahead and a few days behind the place you want to be. Sometimes things align and you want to tear a piece of the shadow as you would a piece from a loaf of bread. But the place you search has no replicable terrain, no map. It moves as you move, a shapeshifter with a tropic of memory, a tropic of fear, a meridian to decide you can, and an equator to know you choose.
Oh. Yes, this poem actually reminds me something that I wanted to comment before, and it's the fact that many of the writers, the poets, and also the prose writers, some of them refer to El Salvador as a type of footprint, let's say. Some of them not even mentioning the country itself, the name of the country, which for us was really interesting, because during the 1980s, as you know, during the war, the literature that was mostly written was testimonial. It would address El Salvador and its war and its injustices up front, let's say, no? Because there was a sense of urgency at that moment, no? There was a war going on, and there was a sense of emergency that you had to tell the story, no? During that time, lots of those works were translated into English and into Swedish or German, etc. But in the last few years, we have been less in the literary map, as using the Claudia's approach to these spaces, no? One of the things that was very interesting for us is that the new writers, for example, Alejandro Córdoba or Andreas Portillo, they were born in the 1990s. They talk about the violence that's going on right now, but from very not realistic literature. It's almost surrealist, no? But me being Salvadorian, I can see it. But for me, that is probably one interesting part of these works, because they document that experience. But anybody who has sensibility towards literature can relate to that, no? Because every country has a history of violence. No, every country has been through has suffered discrimination. Social groups in different countries have also gone through terrible experiences. No, so for us, it was really, really, really important to see that change or that displacement about how to draw our country again. No, mm-hmm. It's still there. It's still there. We come from that. The seed was planted. And we are seeing all of these different, this plural perspective about human condition, as I said before. I know it sounds a little broad, but what I mean is something that people that have not read about El Salvador would understand it too, no? Which is really interesting to see that in the new generations of writers. No? Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to mention now that you were talking about memory and all of this is that not only the diaspora is going through this memory challenge, no? Also the people living in El Salvador are facing this. We're still trying to reconstruct our country. You can see it in the young people. You see it in our young writers. Some of them have told me, you know, nobody would talk to us about the war. No teacher would talk about or explain to us why there was a war. Yes, we also have an amnesia to work on inside El Salvador. Mm-hmm. It's not only something from the diaspora, it's something that we still have to, but from a more filter well, not nationalistic, let's say, or from a dogmatic, polarized, confronting politics, but trying to think we all live here and we all have to live here, no? And we have to approach this reality. Mm-hmm. I think we have a few more minutes because I would like Claudia to read a bit from our anthology so that we also have time to ask questions or to comment.
So I'll read the piece that's in the book in the original, which I wrote in English. There's a translation as well that we talked about yesterday. I want to say that this is part of this larger book that I'm working on, which is a retrieval. It's a moment that I think happens to us who have left, where we experience something that triggers an understanding. And for me, the departure for this piece is a shooting that happened in front of my house in Oakland, California, when I was expecting my second daughter. And I was far removed. I thought I was in my own world as a new mom, far, far away from El Salvador. And then there's this shooting that happens, and I almost die in the shooting. But in the instance, I was the only person on the street. That instant brought me back to experiencing gun violence and the war in El Salvador. And it just collapsed on top of that memory, my experience of El Salvador, collapsed on my life at the time. And it broke everything. It broke everything, and the moment also forced me to recognize that I had lived through a war, and to name that, and to say I was a child when that happened, allowed for a reconstruction, an understanding of that, you know, within myself. And so I think that this part of this reconstruction of ourselves is so integral, not just to ourselves as people living abroad and in El Salvador, but I think there is a lot of lessons in what happened to the people of El Salvador and what's happening now in Syria, for instance.
Exactly.
And in other places in the world, because we are now looking at it 30 years. It has taken me 30 years to tell this story, to have the courage to write it, and with that rear view perspective. And I think there's something there. There's something for us as people, as people inhabiting this world, that there's a lesson, there's something to be learned from the tragic tragic history. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'll read the beginning of this piece, which is titled Ex Libris. Nuestro idioma by Dr. Neftalí Duque Méndez. Historia del Salvador, tomo 1 y 2 by Francisco Monterrey. El materialismo histórico by F. V. Constantinov. 20-something books packed into a cardboard box in 4 small suitcases were the sole possessions we carried the January morning we left El Salvador. I lived with this book since 1981. I have lugged them from West Palm Beach to Los Angeles, to Bochum, Germany, back to California, and finally to Seattle, Washington. All these years, I've waited for the right time to read them, waited for the moment when I'd need them. At low points and during my many moves, I've wanted nothing more than to get rid of them. Why hold on to yellowing volumes filled with academic Spanish, mathematical formulas, treatises on historical materialism? Why was I the one responsible for their care and safety? Why not pretend they got lost? Answers never materialize. Something unformed, caught at the back of my throat, steals any and all effort at responding. One summer, while on break from my teaching job, I unfolded the attic's aluminum ladder and climbed into its sweltering heat. Years before, in a fit of bravery, I'd ripped the cover off a math book. I meant to keep it as a memento and throw away the rest, only to have regret settle firmly in the space where the pages had been. I steeled myself this time. My idea was to pile them in a box and let the city's recycling truck do the rest. The books from my papa's library in El Salvador had 3 fates. The first group escaped with their spines intact inside the cardboard box we took with us. The second set was scattered in the homes of friends and relatives, but the third group suffered the worst fate. The military government considered some books dangerous, akin to hoarding a cache of explosives. Admittance to a clandestine jail, disappearance of or death was the price to be paid for getting caught with his tomes. Papa owned his share of his flag books written by Karl Marx, Antonio Gramsci, and the Salvadoran poet Roque Dalton. In a country not known for its bookstores, Papa had built a sizable library with great effort and care. Then came a single knock at our door on a quiet afternoon in 1980. I opened the door, and Reina, our living housekeeper and nanny, positioned herself behind me. On the front step, 2 men dressed in outfits similar to my father's workday attire offered polite afternoon greetings. Buenas tardes, they said in unison. The shorter man asked, dispense, aquí vive la señora Irma de Castro? That was indeed my mother's name. Sí, aquí vive, I blurted out and went on talking without looking at Reina. But she's not here right now, she's at work. Well, not at work, She is at the sewing school. The men looked at each other. But she does teach at Amalia Viuda de Menendez, no? The taller one inquired. I could feel Reina's bristling exasperation behind me. Sí, allí trabaja de 8 de la mañana a 1 de la tarde, I said with a degree of pride. Upon hearing the hours she worked at the school, the men thanked us and took their leave. I waved them goodbye. The door had barely clicked into the frame when Reina launched into me. Do you know what you just did? She asked before I could edge in a single word and answered, you just told them everything. She hissed, her voice injected with anger. I'm telling your father as soon as he works through the door. She threw me a defiant glance, pivoted on a sandaled foot, and strode into the kitchen. Tell my father? What had I done? I was just being polite. And whatever did she mean by them? I was about to follow her into the kitchen to ask when my stomach churned and panic seized me. Them meant los escuadrones de la muerte, death squads traded in killing. Their job was to exterminate anyone suspected of government opposition. For a while, teachers were targeted by the squads. The principal of my elementary school, a very good friend of my papa, was murdered in his favorite rocking chair as he read the afternoon newspaper. It took them seconds. Engine left idling, jump out of pickup, step via open door into the living room, aim, shoot, to obliterate a brilliant mind. Both my parents were teachers. Papa was also a graduate student at the National University and a leader in the National Teachers Union. He had 3 points against him. Mommy had one. 1, 2, 3, or none, it didn't matter. I connected the dots from the picture Reina had seen the moment I had opened the door. The two strangers were collecting intelligence. I not only corroborated where Mommy lived and worked, but laid out her daily routine.
Hi, I've not had the pleasure or the privilege of reading the anthology or any of your work, but one point you made early on, you're embracing two languages, mm-hmm. And I think you've solved that actually rather well with a single word with Mercado, because it's a market, of course, but it's quite evocative in English or Spanish.
Exactly.
And I noticed in the prose piece you've just read, you use several Spanish phrases, so I think we could work out what Death Squad was and so on. So maybe in a sense that is the answer, that a Salvadorian writer, or maybe Latin American writer, who comes from two cultures, can use the words from both. Why not?
Yeah.
It enriches. You don't have to deprive yourself or to be linguistically correct by excluding, Spanish expressions or, writing only in American or indeed in British English.
Yes. Yes, and that is definitely the first anthology of Central American writers. Just was published in the United States in February. And one of the trends and changes that has happened for those of us who are writing in a diaspora, who speak, who manage and who are fluent in two languages, is the use of both in our writing. Most of those of us in that anthology are English dominant, but in order to feel whole on the page as writers, the Spanish needs to also be part of that. So that is a very conscious effort on my part to sort of see myself as whole as I can be, by including the Spanish words. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I was so delighted to see a book about El Salvador that I practically jumped when I saw the ad in DLRB. So thank you very much, and thank you for your reading. And I was just wondering, I can totally understand that it's so hard to talk about such a terrible, bloody civil war. But there were also a lot of really inspiring things that happened during the Civil War, because there was such an amazing
solidarity
and yes. Incredible popular movement, health, popular education, women's groups.
Exactly.
The Salvadorian guerrillas had the biggest concentration of women in the Comandancia. There were lots of things that inspired many of us,
yes,
all over the world.
Yes.
Do people talk about that part?
Well, in the mainstream establishment spaces, not really. But there are very courageous people that want to keep the memory of this. And I would like to mention the Museo de la Palabra y la Imagen, which would be a museum of the word and the image. This is an incredible work that they're doing, especially, for example, because I was really small when the war was going on. No? There were several things that I never really knew about it because I was a little girl. No, we were trying to survive in that. But some things that I have learned through them, for example, for me, it was very important to see that women were empowered during the Civil War, because it gave them the opportunity to think and to act and to take a decision, to make a decision, to actually say, okay, I'm not happy with this, I'm gonna go do something about it, no? So yes, there are some efforts. Of course, you would find it in several marginalized spaces. You would find poetry, you can go to poetry readings, art, for example, dedicates a lot of this, but in the mainstream media, for example, or in the mainstream spaces, it's not really there as it should be. Maybe they can write a little note somewhere, but not for me. It should be better done from my perspective, because we were talking before with the ambassador of El Salvador, no. When I went to El Mozote for the first time, which is a place where there was a massacre in 1981, and I didn't know about this until I was 26 years old. And it was because I had met somebody that said, you have to come with me. And you have to see this. And when I went there, there was one teacher with students, and they were telling, he told me, this is something spectacular, this is something out of the, should be talked about, these things should be talked about, not from manipulative way from political perspective, but from the humane way. I don't know, my English sometimes betrays me, but from a humanistic point of view, we did this to each other, but let's try to, with this wound, let's make it scar and then go on, but we have to remember who we are, where we came from. And I think there's a lot of work that still has to be done in schools to talk about it more openly without being feared of that they will give you a category, no? Because it goes beyond categories from my point of view. But still, yes, I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And through literature, we're trying, for example, the first story that opens this book is about an author that was in the mountains, a guerrilla, no? And then we have Horacio Castellanos Moya, which is an amazing realistic writer who talks about a writer being in Mexico, no? But it's all about to get together all of this of oral history. We're still putting the pieces together after 25 years.
I've been amazed, and I was in Seattle doing a, Seattle has a garden tour every year where you could go and tour people's gardens who've incorporated, you know, husbandry into their, you know, into their backyards. And I had, my husband bought me a bracelet that I had been, that said El Salvador, you know, those woven bracelets that I wore for years. It was dirty, and I just never took it off. And this woman, I was there with my kids because we wanted to have chickens, and she ran over me and she said, she just recognized and could relate to me because she read El Salvador on the bracelet. And she had been, Seattle was a city that supported, it was a sanctuary city, and there were a lot of actions that were taken. So there's a lot of solidarity that happened with the people of El Salvador that's still there. But I think that from those 30 years, all those stories need to come back. Those stories need to be retold to understand ourselves and to see who we were then and who other people were toward us. Because, for instance, in the United States, now Salvadorans make the fourth largest immigrant group. We make the fourth largest immigrant group from Latin America. And yet, when you see stories about El Salvador, it continues to be this very negative portrayal of, you know, immigrants who are coming to take everything away from us, people who don't contribute in any way, when in fact, the immigration that's happening now, it's still linked to the 30 years from that war that we had. It is still part of that. And so this lack of context and understanding and this continually to point fingers at us as immigrants, those stories could only be sort of patched up the more people tell their stories so that we could understand each other and recover that information.
Thank you. Edward from the Anglo-Central American Society. I don't think I speak just for myself when I say that, you know, listening to your poems is really very inspiring. And I did come in slightly late. I may have missed it. I apologise if I did. But which of your poems do you feel really epitomises the character of the Salvadorian or the Salvadorian people?
Oh, that's a very hard question. That is really hard. I mean, I think, you know, I think those of us from El Salvador are Salvadoran whether we want it or not. That's who we are. That's what so we don't have to try very hard, you know. So in essence, the title of my book is This City, right? And I am an urban planner, and I'm serving in this very public role for the city of Seattle, where I'm sort of representing the city. And at the same time, every time I give a speech, every time I do a presentation or read poems, I'm standing there both as a person who is in love with Seattle, right, and as a Salvadorian. It cannot be torn, it cannot be separated. So every single one of those poems, and it harkens back in some way or another, you know, to that experience of being Salvadoran. I mean, I'll read you the closing poem here, because I think that after chasing an understanding of the city, I realized that really the city I'm looking for, I am never going to find, because the city I'm looking for is the one that's made up of my memories, of the places that I've been living in, of the people that are part of my circle. And so in the end, really, the city is the city that lives inside of me. And so I think that sort of gets at that idea. So I'll read the poem and we'll see where it lands. And it's titled Así, which means like this. Así. This is the city that saw the raw mass of me, the quick and slow of me, the I'm afraid and I can't of me, the it's beyond me side of me. This is the place that showed me I fit in, I take space. This city let me be. My hair really is that size side of me, its shaft an electric chandrel vibrating its own humming life, the untamable side of me. See how the world dances above my eyebrows? This continent plus that continent together, on y va ensemble, vamos juntos side of me. The city that said, me gustas así, don't come down anything, don't tame nothing. Pa' que? The leaf that blows away in autumn and returns, breaking bark in spring, the leaf, the branch, the trunk, the root, the tree, all of it. I am all of it. Así, aquí. I think through stories and through finding our way and the courage to tell each other, and not necessarily through writing, just creating spaces of finding ourselves and making ourselves whole. I really truly believe in that, that there is orality is very powerful, because we cannot expect everybody to sit down and pen a poem or write a book, or that's not the way life works.
No.
But we all could tell our stories, and I think creating spaces for that in our work, in that sense, I see myself more as a cultural worker trying to create spaces to become whole, to recover yourself, because the place I wanted is the place I have. It's my body. That's the one city I could say, yeah, I live here. I live inside of myself.
I'm very much looking forward to reading the books. And I'm curious about the post-testimonial literature. I wonder if you could tell us more about post-testimonial literature.
Oh, in, yes.
Yeah. And possibly could we hear a poem by one of these poets?
Yeah. Let's see.
Well, the new writers, the young writers, I would say. For example, I can read you this poem by Miroslava. Miroslava Rosales, she was born in 1985. And she has this, I love this poem because it talks about the violence we have to go through, but she has a very positive note, let's say, no? For a change. No, it has everything that it had before, yeah. But now there is not a sense of urgency as we had it before. For example, a writer actually crafts his work probably more than before. I'm not saying it was a different type of poet. Testimonial writer has its own merit. In itself, no? I'm not trying to say which one is better than the other. But it's a different kind of writing, no? It's more oral, it's more colloquial. You will find in these new writers, for example, that there is like a need to explore aesthetics even more. Not only the message, but also the form. Try to craft the poem, you know, from you could say more a traditional literary way, but also experimental. No, some of them experiment, like Vladimir Amaya. He has very interesting poems too. In this book, we have Andreas Portillo. He writes an amazing story because he talks about neoliberalism in El Salvador and how marketing contributes to this, you know, people to consume, no? But he uses like a type of science fiction, perspective, no? But I will read now this poem by Miroslava. She was translated by Jessica Rainey. I think it's important that we mention the translator's name too. It says, "Allegro vivace, love a single syllable, of electric waterfalls and snowstorms, of planes and kites, doorway to my flaws and shipwrecks. We climb to the same heights. Love you. Taste like nispero, honey and oats, like an endless earthquake, like melon in a courtyard of clarity and tenderness, like a mouth of sea air and dolphins. Like a kiss beneath a gateway of daisies and polished stars. Love, I have also seen you deluded in days of alcohol and cocaine, in the voice of Robert Johnson and the electric howls of Ginsberg, in dizzy spells and short circuits. Something about edges entices you until you become one, a solitary, a noisy midnight without sedatives. Love, your word is an obelisk that appears on this page without warning, a wellspring where I acknowledge my wounds. You know how much of my foliage was felled in the war, but in this country, we can become an allegro vivace." Okay, so she also has others that are more pessimistic and are more, of course, no, that are more existential. Maybe that would be a different note that I would probably emphasize this, because before it was more about the collective, more about from a we, let's say, no, from we as a country. But now, yes, it's more existential, maybe sometimes individualist point of view, points of view. And as I said before, more experimental. For example, this poem that I read, I probably didn't read it I didn't give it the exact, because it doesn't have any punctuation, for example, no? And the experimenting on the form, but also on the way to sculpt violence, no? Trying to find also the beauty of literature in itself, the beauty of writing. No? Yes, yes, yes. That I would, it's really hard to say just in a 2 minutes, but I would say that existentialism, aesthetics as an experiment, and also this the I more present than maybe the we. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean, of course, this is really general, no? That doesn't mean that during the testimonial writing there weren't any, because there, I don't know if you know about this poet that she died when she was like 20. She was killed during the war, and they found her poems in her backpack, no? Excuse me? It's good that they were published under another name, and at this moment my memory, you're going to excuse me, but I can tell you later. Amada Libertad. Okay, Amada Libertad, that's her name, which if you translate it to English would be like beloved liberty, no? Something like that, no? Amada. And she was killed during the war, and then they found her poems in her backpack, and she talks about everything. No, she talks about the war, but she also talks about her being in the war, about her loving, about her body. Also, what I'm trying to say, yes, I'm trying to give you a really general perspective, but of course, if you get into it, you will find different grades. No? You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all for your comments and questions. There will hopefully be time for a little bit more, kind of informally, over a glass of wine. There's books for sale. We'll even put the air conditioning on. Sorry we couldn't do that before. We just need it so people can hear properly. Thank you all so much, Claudia, Tanya. Thank you very, very much for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, our guests, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this London Review Bookshop event. For more, visit our website at www.londonreviewbookshop.co.uk or search for the London Review Bookshop on iTunes.